addressing the first day back at week. Joining me now on the phone is our regular correspondent from the Canberra Times, Sarah Basford-Canales. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Jeff, and Happy New Year.
Happy
start, isn't it?
Oh, mate, Happy New Year to you. Like I said to folks at the beginning, let's hope that 2022 isn't just like 2021, i.e. just 2020 with a sort of ugly face mask on.
Yeah, well, it's starting off pretty rough already. I mean, I don't think anyone really expected it to be so much better, but we probably didn't expect it to be this worse either. So, I'm sure all the Western Australians over there have been seeing what's happening on the eastern states, getting ravaged by COVID, but...
The funniest thing to watch from over here with COVID, and I hate saying anything is funny to do with it, but the whole Novak Djokovic saga over there has just been an interesting game of responsibility tennis, not real tennis.
Yeah, exactly. They've been sort of serving to each other and neither one is getting an ace, or, you know, they're double faulting. That's obviously the big story today amid, you know, I guess your usual COVID disasters. But we're seeing Novak Djokovic versus the Home Affairs Minister Karen Andrews in court today after he was denied entry to the country ahead of the Australian Open. So at this point, they've just released him from hotel detention. And he's allowed to leave the hotel for his appeal, and we're still sort of waiting to see where it's going to land. But at this point, it's really obviously up in the court's decision there. So, but whether he's allowed in unvaccinated or not will be a big political point regardless, really, because if he's allowed in, then the government will essentially be looking like they're allowing in, people who refuse to get vaccinated or... for whatever reason, but it seems to be more on the basis of him being a tennis celebrity rather than, any medical consideration there. So, but if he's not let in, then they'll get the international pressure, and then there's all sorts of things that could come from that as well. So, starting the year off great.
Well, I mean, he certainly didn't, from what I saw in the news yesterday, he certainly didn't do his case any favours by acting the goose and going on social media a mere 2 days after being, well, in his own claims, in his application to enter the country, being COVID positive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously the social media sort of response there is also another realm to this court issue, but essentially the judge is going to look at the facts, and the facts are that he did seem to be granted a medical exemption, but the Border Force officials upon arrival did not accept it for whatever reason. So the courts are really going to examine that and decide whether or not that was legal grounds. And then we'll see if Novak makes it to his, I think it would be his 21st Grand Slam title win if he was to be allowed into the Australian Open and win it. Maybe it's 22nd, don't fact check me on that. So, yeah, I guess really that's a big thing that's going to happen over the next two weeks, aside from, I guess, the major outbreaks that are happening on the East Coast. So, unfortunately, we're starting 2022 in a very similar way to 2021 at this point, and let's just hope February's better.
Now, you obviously weren't having a proper holiday over the break because you were in assessing the release of the 2001 cabinet documents. I mean, that's always an intriguing thing for me. Is it the same for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually did end up going away, so I had to rewrite because they were rewritten, obviously, before that January 1st period. But it's always a very interesting time, but this year was particularly interesting because 2001, if you can set your mind back all those years, those two decades, it was really a very pivotal year when you sort of look back on it. We obviously had the 9/11 attacks later in the year, but there are a number of other issues that sort of came up during that year as well, including there was a climate change debate that wasn't fully overtaken by the climate skeptics that we saw for the decade between 2000 and 2010. We also saw the Tampa affair and Australia's shift in, border policies. So not allowing people who arrive by boat and sending them to offshore detention. So, you know, it's a really interesting time to look at in hindsight, given, you know, everything that's happened and also everything that hasn't happened in that time. We're still debating climate change all these years later. We've finally gotten to the point where people just accept it, but we still haven't quite gotten to the point where we're actually committing any action towards it. Very interesting.
I was intrigued to see, in your own writing there, saying that Howard, John Howard, was a climate agnostic and he was listening to science before many others were. Can you rip the lid off that one? That intrigues me.
Yeah. It is really interesting. I mean, it's interesting because he actually said he was an agnostic in December during the media event, so that was mid-December. So him, you know, 20 years later, is still saying that he's a climate change agnostic. He's not particularly swayed either way. But for whatever reason, back in 2000 and 2001, he did listen to what the public service provided him in terms of climate change policy advice. And I actually spoke to the Environment Department Secretary at the time a few months earlier. And he told me as well that, you know, Howard at the time was really happy to listen to the science-informed advice that the public service was giving him. So they truly did consider an emissions trading scheme. They obviously had the economic, you know, argument in mind as well, trying to figure out how to, I guess, appease people in the bush where, you know, a lot of these mining towns that would get hurt quite badly if mines were to shut down suddenly in 2000. But it wasn't really overwhelming, the argument. So it's quite an interesting point in time. And obviously, as we saw in the US when President Bush took over and we had Vice President Dick Cheney as well, he was a climate denialist. When they took over and the Australians looked to the US, especially after 9/11, it really just shifted everything. And we sort of went down the next 10 years of climate scepticism before we could even get to the point of how to address climate change. So it's a really interesting period. And if anyone is as nerdy as I am, it's worth looking through those documents and reading for yourself.
Looking at that little period there and looking at how John Howard was dealing with climate change as it started to become apparent to more people, is that the key, or was that the key to John Howard's longevity, the ability to be an agnostic, just to sit on the fence and ply the middle ground?
Yeah, it sort of appears that way. He was able to manage you know, very opposing views within the Liberal Party at that time, and we're obviously seeing that still to this day. But he was obviously a bit more diplomatic in the way he was able to, I guess, I mean, it appears that way anyway, based on the documents that we've seen, because he did have people within his own cabinet. We had the then Environment Minister, which was Robert Hill. He was what you'd probably consider a more left-leaning Liberal today. He believed in climate change, said that we needed to do a lot of work to address it. And then we had the Senator, Robert Minchin, who was the more Industry Minister. And he was very opposed to really any climate change. He actually put forward a cabinet plan to deal with the rising energy prices at the time, and it didn't consider the environment at all. And we saw the Department of Environment actually push back and say, how could you not consider the environment at all in an energy plan? So John Howard was able to sort of see both sides and appease both parties. But at the end of the day, we obviously saw that it got overwhelmed once President Bush took over and Australia really looked to the US to align with them. And then really since then, it's just really been the black hole of climate change policy since. So, there were external forces there. But I think to Howard's credit, while, you know, many might criticise him for many other things, he did actually listen to the advice he was given, and it was science-informed advice.
Well, yeah, listened, but we're still in the position that we're in now with Scott Morrison 2022.
Look, absolutely.
What also caught my eye over the last week was this claim that the government would be naive to dismiss foreign interference being a threat in the upcoming election.
Yeah, it's one of those, we call them like sneaky reports that slip in through the holiday period where everyone's sort of going away. But it's been an ongoing issue for a while now. The Senate committee that delivered this report, I believe it was opened up in 2019. So they've been looking at how the government would deal with foreign interference, especially in light of an upcoming election. You know, we've seen it happen in the US with potential Russian and Iranian interference. And there's also concern that there could be potentially Chinese government interference as well in elections. And we luckily haven't seen sort of a large-scale one happen in Australia, but there definitely has been attempts by sort of smaller actors. So this Senate report is just an interim report for now, but it did say that, you know, the government's response so far, they interviewed a lot of Senate witnesses from different departments, and they all kind of pointed the finger at each other saying, no, that person would take this area, we don't do that area, but then they'd go ask the other person from that department, and they would say, no, we don't really do that area. So it became very clear that there's no real, I guess, whole of government agency-wide response to if we did have a major interference campaign during the federal election. And obviously that's going to happen in the next 5 months. So it's really quite critical that that gets fixed as soon as possible. So let's see what the government does in amongst everything else.
This habit of mutual finger-pointing seems to be the MO of this current federal government.
Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously this is the public service in this case that's doing it as well. But, I mean, there's also been a suggestion that that's being politicised in the lead-up to the election. So, but, yeah, definitely this finger-pointing is part of the problem. It's no one really taking accountability for something that is quite a serious issue. And, you know, while we might have been lucky so far in terms of having pretty limited occasions or occurrences of a foreign interference, we can't predict that that's going to be the case again for the 2022 federal election. So, you know, it's a matter of it being really luck that this hasn't been a big issue before. We need to have preparation and be proactive rather than reactive, which is unfortunately what a lot of the government responses have been really in the last 2 years, especially with COVID. So,
and
of things to look forward to
of that election, what's your call of looking forward? Is it May or March?
It's still a little too early to tell. Actually, I mean, right now, if I was going to say it would have to be May. There's no way the government wants to go into the election with the, you know, the wreckage of what's happening with the East Coast. It doesn't look good for them. But saying that, you know, pushing it to May might not make it any better. There might be, you know, worse variants ahead and more government stuff up. So at this point, I'm calling May, but I wouldn't place my bets on it.
Well, at this point, I mean, the cabinet would obviously be kind of wishing they could jump in the time machine and jump back to sometime last year and hold the election then, because things haven't got any better for them electorally, have they?
No. It would have been pretty good for them if they just set the election for around October, November last year, just as the vaccine was, booting up and everyone was getting vaccinated and we didn't have major outbreaks at the time. Sort of Sydney was starting to die down, I guess. And now we're just looking at ridiculous case numbers that we couldn't have even imagined
right
when we were in September, October last year.
It is certainly out of hand. I don't think anyone wants to hear the words "let it rip" coming out of anybody's mouth when it comes to COVID.
No, certainly not.
Sarah Basford-Canalsa, thank you very much for joining us again from Canberra, and Happy New Year, and stay safe over there, mate.
Yeah. No worries, you too, and keep those borders shut unless you want to end up like us.
We most certainly will. We'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Catch us, bye.
That's Sarah Basford-Canales from the Canberra Times. She's the political specialist there. She'll be back in another couple of weeks to give us another update on all the goings on in Canberra.